I'm here today in a critical context because I am one of the members of the bone team that we have here at Boston Medical Center, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of the challenges that we face when we're approaching this concept of screening osteoporosis in men. And I also want to talk just sort of a general overview of osteoporosis. So we're going to talk about the fact that osteoporosis is really not a rare problem in men. It carries a lot of disease burden, and a lot of that burden comes from the fracture and the subsequent mortality after the fracture. So we're going to look at some of the controversies that exist just in coming up with a definition for what osteoporosis in men is. And we'll talk about what screening guidelines are available for you out there. We'll review some of the risk factors that you need to be thinking about when you are sort of presented with a man who might have osteoporosis. And finally, I'll end by looking at the initial management. Okay. So what is osteoporosis? Well, the WHO defines it as an asymptomatic systemic skeletal disease that's characterized by low bone mass and microarchitectural deterioration of bone tissue, leading to enhanced bone fragility and consequent increase in fracture. So that's a lot of words, but one of the first things that I think people think about when they think about osteoporosis is going to be a picture like this, where you can see the microarchitectural deterioration, particularly in the vertebral spine. But remember, osteoporosis is not localized, right? This is a systemic disease, and it affects the entire skeleton. So osteoporosis is responsible for greater than 1.5 million vertebral and non-vertebral fractures every year. And yes, the vertebral fractures sort of dominate, but other fractures, including hip fractures, are very significant as well. And what's the problem with these fractures? Well, they're associated with so much of morbidity, right? Certainly, there's the mortality after one year after the hip fracture, but there's the disability that comes along with those fractures, with disability, difficulty walking independently, inability to live independently. It comes with other factors like back pain, skeletal deformity, body image sort of dysmorphia. It comes with increased use of narcotic analgesics in this patient population. So there are a lot of changes that happen after particularly a hip fracture. There's certainly, moving beyond sort of the individual patient, there's a huge economic burden that comes along with this. And the annual cost of treating osteoporosis rival some of the other diseases that we commonly treat both in the inpatient and outpatient setting, namely cardiovascular disease and asthma. Osteoporosis has a very similar annual cost. So when we think about bone disease, maybe most people are used to thinking about it in women, particularly in postmenopausal women. So let's look at what's sort of special about bones in men. First of all, approximately 1 in 5 men over the age of 50 will have an osteoporosis-related fracture sometime during their lifetime. But the incidence is very different in men in comparison to women. Men, actually, before the age of 50, are the ones who are more likely to sustain a fracture. And that has to do with sort of the type and frequency of trauma that they're exposed to during the course of their lifetime. It's after the age of 50 that women start to have that increased incidence of fracture in comparison to men, once theoretically a woman becomes postmenopausal. And in fact, it's only in later decades that men's incidence sort of catches up. And a lot of that has to do with what's happening early on in life and what is the peak bone mineral density that's being achieved by men versus women. And we know, in fact, based on the type of bone that men have, they achieve a higher peak bone mineral density in their 20s and 30s in comparison to women. So again, quickly looking at women, we can see this sort of steady increase in fracture risk after a woman passes the age of 50. But like I said, in men, this profile looks a lot different. And it's really only after the age of 70 that we start to see this exponential increase in hip fractures, or in all fractures really, but particularly in hip fractures. So overall, yes, women have women over the age of 50 in general have twice the lifetime risk of sustaining a fracture. But we can see a few things that are important here. At least a third of all the hip fractures that are happening in men. Okay, so this is going to be sort of more important as we think about this a little bit more. And really, this is what's important. It's the mortality that we see after these major types of fractures. Particularly after hip fractures, we can see the mortality in men is significantly higher than what it is in women. And there are likely a few factors that sort of relate to that mortality differential, the pre-fracture functional status of the patients, the multiple comorbidities that men sort of bring into having those hip fractures. But again, age is still going to be an important consideration here because, like I said, we have this exponential increase in the later decades seen in men. Again, we see that primarily in hip fractures where we see the highest mortality, but we can, but even vertebral fractures can be very predictive for men. They may not carry as high a mortality as do the hip fractures. But what vertebral fractures are very predictive of is other future fractures. Okay, so therefore other potential future mortality. Looking at that mortality a little bit more in depth, for men are twice as likely to die in the hospital after a hip fracture in comparison to women. The one-year mortality rate, the mortality rate at 1 year after a hip fracture is 35% in men in comparison to about 17 to 20% in women. So certainly the mortality impact on men is significantly higher. This comes with a lot of disability, right? 50% of men are institutionalized, need institutionalized care after the fracture, and most can't regain the level of function that they had before the fracture. And as a result, men are less likely than women to return to independent living after the fracture. Okay, so these are pretty grave statistics, but again, I'm glad that I was sort of called here because still, as healthcare providers, despite that high mortality burden that comes with men and fractures, we're still not very good at identifying this and doing something about it if we can identify it. So here we have this retrospective study from the archives that looked at who received treatment after a hip fracture, okay? And this was at the time of hospital discharge. Only about 7% of men in general were getting any sort of bone therapy in comparison to about a third of the women in the study received some sort of bone therapy. And when I say bone therapy, that can be as simple as calcium and vitamin D or some sort of more potent anti-resorptive therapy like a bisphosphonate, okay? So these people weren't getting treatment both initially at the time of discharge from right after the hip fracture, but also subsequently. Looking at these patients 5 years out, so these patients leave the hospital, they go back to their primary care provider, you know, saying presumably, you know, hey doc, I had a hip fracture. Even 5 years after the hip fracture, only about 25% of the men were receiving any sort of bone therapy in comparison to three-quarters of the women. 75% of the women got some sort of bone therapy. And again, I say that's any bone therapy. What's of note here is these men that did receive the bone therapy, the majority of it was just calcium and vitamin D. Okay, two-thirds of them, all they got was calcium and vitamin D. So maybe the providers were noticing that they need to give these men something, but they weren't exactly sure what they should be giving. Should they give them anti-resorptive therapy? So there are a lot of sort of barriers to identifying and effectively managing osteoporosis in men. Some of those things may be that, oh, osteoporosis, it's a disease of women. When I'm presented with a male patient, maybe that's not what I'm supposed to be thinking about. And hopefully we're going to be working towards changing that. But there are also practice barriers, right? You want to diagnose osteoporosis in a man, you want to get a DEXA scan. Unfortunately, that's not easily reimbursed by Medicare, right? And we're going to take a look at that. So this is exactly what we're going to sort of, I want to be focusing on the rest of my talk, you know, looking at how can we identify and advise our patients, our male patients, for whom osteoporosis might be an issue for, and hopefully we won't leave this and simply say, just don't get old. Okay. So a lot of thinking about osteoporosis starts with how we define osteoporosis. And unfortunately, there really hasn't been a good consensus on how to establish the diagnosis of osteoporosis in men. We know very well how we define it in women, but in men it's been a slightly hazier issue, and most of the data that's available is really just data from the past 10 years. Okay? So a lot of sort of looking at osteoporosis in men started in the late 90s, and Haynes came out. They used the WHO criteria to define osteoporosis, and I'm going to tell you what that is in 1 second. And they said 3 to 6% of men over the age of 50 were estimated to have osteoporosis, whereas 20 to 47% may have osteopenia. So osteopenia is really, it's really quite prevalent, whereas osteoporosis may be a little bit more, maybe a little bit less likely. But, you know, again, a lot of this comes from the way that they diagnosed osteoporosis. So we have very clear criteria on how to diagnose osteoporosis when we're looking at a postmenopausal woman, right? There's a huge database on this. We use the DEXA scan and we calculate this thing called the T-score. And if you remember, the T-score compares a woman to a younger, healthier female population. So it really is comparing a postmenopausal woman to a 25-year-old female. And if that postmenopausal woman's bone mineral density is 2.5 standard deviations less than the mean for that young, healthy population, then that woman is defined as having osteoporosis. Okay, right? So this is really well established because for women, we have a lot of data sort of that we've gathered over really like the past 3 decades. Unfortunately for men, it's really not as clear exactly how we should be defining osteoporosis. And in the past 10 years, some of the studies have looked at sort of, should we even be using DEXA? Is that the best way to sort of identify osteoporosis in men? Is DEXA as predictive for fracture in men as it is in women? Our T-scores, should we be calculating these T-scores just like we do in women? Is that going to be predictive of fracture risk? Something that has really confounded a lot of the data that's out there is when we calculate a T-score, should we be basing that on a male normal reference range, or should we be basing that on a female normal reference range? And unfortunately, there has this, you know, access to a standard male reference range has actually been pretty limited. So there are many sort of larger studies that are out there that actually looked at T-scores from bone mineral density in men calculated on the basis of female normal reference ranges. Obviously, that's going to skew the data significantly because you're going to be identifying a lot fewer men as having osteoporosis. And then finally, what T-score is it that should define osteoporosis and osteopenia in men? So lots of questions to be looking at, and we're going to sort of start to take a look at this. So lots of different bone measurement techniques that you can use out there. Certainly DEXA is a very common one, but it's not limited to DEXA. There's quantitative CT, there's ultrasound, and in fact, ultrasound has been looked at a little bit. Why? Because it's actually really, it's much less expensive than DEXA. And it's not as operator dependent as getting a DEXA scan is. Okay, so getting a DEXA scan really sort of depends on doing it at a center where the person doing it has a lot of experience doing the DEXA. Ultrasound doesn't depend on that as much. So theoretically, you might think that that might be a good way to assess bone mineral density. And in fact, in men, there is a little bit of data that shows that lower bone mineral densities calculated from ultrasound do correlate with a higher fracture risk in men. Unfortunately, the amount of data that we have is really limited, and still, you know, the convention is using DEXAs in men simply because of the amount of available data and the amount of sort of normative data for these techniques. Because with ultrasound, if you are to obtain a bone mineral density value and obtain a T-score from that, you know, it's less than one standard deviation below the average ultrasound bone mineral density from a younger population, there's not a lot of good sort of data to tell you what to do with that information. Okay, so we still use DEXA in men. Now, to answer a lot of those other questions that I talked about, came the Mr. Oss study. And this is actually an important study to remember for older men with osteoporosis. And this sort of established a lot of what we incorporate into our current definition for osteoporosis in men to date. So the Mr. Oss study was a U.S.-based multi-center study, so all across the U.S., 6,000 men over the age of 65 across all ethnicities. So it's really the largest database that we have to date on osteoporosis in men. And it looked at a few different things. I mentioned before sort of defining T-scores. Even in men, they sort of looked at what happens if you use a female normal reference range, but they also looked at using gender-specific reference ranges. And in general, the convention became to use the gender-specific reference range. So what did we learn here? Taking a look at this, so for example, in the 65 to 69-year-old population, at a given T-score, so here's a T-score of minus 2.5. For the men, that correlated to about a 7 to 8% risk of fracture in the next 3 years. Versus for the same T-score in women, same T-score of minus 2.5 in women, that correlated to a 17% 3-year fracture risk. Okay, so we're already learning something right there. At a given T-score, the man's chance of fracturing is a lot less than the woman's chance of fracturing. And that's going to be really important as we sort of come up with clinical guidelines to use as far as doing further evaluation or treating these patients. Okay, men have a lower risk of fracturing at a given T-score. What's also interesting in this population is that looking at the older men, as the men got older and as the population in general got older, that differential in fracture risk at a given T-score got smaller and smaller. Okay? So by the time the men are 80 years old, their fracture risk for the next 3 years is much closer to what the female fracture risk is. Okay? So that's going to be sort of very important to remember. So what did we learn from Mr. Oss? First of all, DEXA is a good way to go. Okay, DEXA is a good measurement tool for assessing the risk fracture in men. And we want to start to use the convention of using a gender-specific reference range. Don't compare men to women. Compare men to men. And luckily here at BMC, the bone mineral density the DEXA technique that we use incorporates male normative values. So you can be assured when you guys are ordering your bone mineral densities, the T-scores that are coming are comparing men to men. So that's actually really important. And then again, the age-specific prevalence of osteoporosis and fracture is lower in men than it is in women. Therefore, men have an absolute lower risk for fracture than women at any given T-score. Okay? So think about that. That means that the guidelines recommending pharmacologic therapy at a certain T score, you're probably going to get a different benefit in men versus women. Okay, so that's really, that's going to be an important thing to sort of keep in mind. So we're sort of coming up more with a definition of what is osteoporosis. Diagnosing osteoporosis, the WHO still says it is commonly made at a DEXA T-score of minus 2.5 or less. And again, that's going to be based on gender-specific reference ranges. But there's no obvious T-score that should necessarily dictate clinical decisions about additional evaluation or therapy. Okay? And let's take one other look at this. Let's look at who is fracturing. Is it the people that we're identifying as osteoporotic? And in women, we know that it is. Okay? You define a woman as osteoporotic, and for the most part, the majority of fractures are happening in that population. Really, I mean, for hip fractures, really the majority of those fractures in women are happening in people that were identified as osteoporotic based on T-scores. But in men, the story's a little bit different, right? We define a man as having osteoporotic, as being osteoporotic. We're not going to be identifying all the fractures that are happening in that population. So the story does not start and end with bone mineral density in men, okay? Rather, with lower levels of bone mineral density, you need to have a higher clinical concern, okay? So bone density isn't the only thing we should be thinking about in men. There's also this sort of bone quality issue that we need to think about. And we need to move a little bit beyond the DEXA when we're evaluating men. So how can we start to think about bone quality issues? Well, certainly age is going to play a huge role in the impact on bone quality. I've already showed you longitudinal studies suggest bone loss accelerates in men after the age of 70. Age-related bone loss explains 60% of osteoporosis in men. So where is that coming from? Well, obviously in the world of endocrine, we think about sex steroids a lot, and that's a great place to start when it comes to age-related changes in bone. When thinking about sex steroids, the natural thing in men is to think about testosterone first. And we know testosterone plays an important role in men. The Mr. Oz study showed us that for men who had a testosterone level less than 200, 200 is going to be a very important number that we remember. For men who had a testosterone level less than 200, they had 3 times the amount of bone loss in their hip. Okay? But you might want to say, oh, bone loss starts and ends with thinking about testosterone. But actually, that's not the case, okay? Estradiol, it's becoming more and more apparent that even in men, estradiol is the dominant sex steroid when it comes to bone health. So estrogen plays the dominant role, even in men, for maintaining bone mineral density. So osteoporosis is a disease of bone turnover, and these are markers of bone turnover. Switching off that bone turnover obviously will either improve or prevent the bone the osteoporosis. So as we can see here, this subgroup, that had only estrogen exposure had the highest amount of anti-resorptive effect, even more than the testosterone alone group. So again, even in men. Testosterone, yes, it's important to think about, but again, estrogen is going to be playing the dominant role in the bone. So yes, we can see here absolutely that testosterone is playing an important role. We know also testosterone can be protective for men against fractures because it contributes to muscle strength and balance and overall sort of energy of the man. And certainly, it's also the substrate for estradiol in men, right? Estrogen comes from aromatization of testosterone in men. So testosterone, you know, certainly has several important roles, but don't forget about the estrogen when it comes to men. Okay, so we're thinking about these sex steroids because we're thinking about the changes that naturally happen over time, and we know that those sex steroid levels decrease with age, and so age greater than 70 has been shown to be one of the most important predictors, both of low bone mineral density and of predicting hip fracture risk. Okay, so these risk factors here that can be part of your general risk factor assessment are the ones that are most predictive of low bone mineral density and fracture risk. So they include age greater than 70, the BMI extremes, so low body weight or obesity as well. Both are actually associated with low bone mineral density and increased fracture. Significant and rapid weight loss, physical inactivity. Certainly the history that you get on your patient should include a medication history. Has the patient been on steroids recently? Do they have a prior fracture history? Okay, these are the most important risk factors, and that what limited screening guidelines that we have that are available, these are the most commonly sort of recommended risk factors to assess in your patients. Above and beyond that, there are other potential risk factors. And in men, at the very least, these have been relatively well correlated with low bone mineral density, but not as well associated with changes in fracture risk. Okay? But again, still very important to be assessing in your patients. Alcohol use, tobacco use, is there a family history of osteoporosis, hypogonadism, and this goes beyond just the age-related changes of testosterone levels, but also the hypogonadism that's associated with, for example, androgen deprivation therapy. In men with osteoporosis, this subset population is very well studied, androgen deprivation therapy. And that's both pharmacologic and orchiectomy after prostate cancer. Again, spinal cord injury, very well associated with low bone mineral density, as is low calcium intake and low vitamin D intake. So, I've talked about sort of what conclusions we can draw from DEXAs in men. I've talked about some of the risk factors that may be important in assessing men. Let's put this all together and let's apply it to the patient. And of course, sort of the first question that arises is, which patient should we be applying this to, right? Who are we supposed to be screening? Now, you know, there's no universal agreement amongst all sort of our societal governing bodies on who we should be screening. Should it be the men over 70 years old and the men who are over 50, who have a lot of risk factors? Again, remember, those 70-year-old men, that's the age when men start having that exponential increased incidence for hip fracture. Or, you know, what's happening in women? In women, at the age of around 50 to 55, a woman goes through menopause and starts that slow increasing incidence of hip fracture. Screening bone mineral densities really only come into play 10 years later. Is that what we should be doing in men? Should we be only screening men over the age of 80, 10 years after we sort of start to see that increasing incidence, and those over the age of 65 if they have multiple risk factors or prior fractures or something like that? The reason why, one of the big reasons why there haven't been sort of universal screening guidelines that have popped up all over the place is because cost effectiveness plays a huge role here. Okay, and this was sort of really well looked at in 2007 in this JAMA study that looked at what was happening. So this is data from 2004. And basically, they looked at expenses per quality-adjusted life years, and the expenses for treating male osteoporosis varied from $30,000 to $250,000, depending on what age of patient you were treating. Okay, so what's coming into this cost? The cost of the DEXA and the cost of the treatment. And the main treatment that we're looking at here were bisphosphonates, namely oral bisphosphonates. We are lucky in that the past 10 years, the cost of those bisphosphonates has slowly been decreasing, okay? And the costs right now per year are somewhere right below $500 per year, okay? This study showed that bone set densitometry followed by bisphosphonate therapy was cost-effective in men over the age of 80 or in men over the age of 65 with multiple risk factors or prior fracture if the cost per year of the bisphosphonate was $500. It really only became cost-effective to screen men who were 70 years old if the price of the bisphosphonate was cheaper, closer to $250 per year. Okay, we're currently sort of stuck somewhere right between here at present with current costs of bisphosphonate. So where does that put us? What screening guidelines are there available? Well, a few societies have come out with screening guidelines. The American College of Physicians, ACP, did present screening guidelines, but they were extremely vague. They basically said, screen older men. Good luck. You know, sort of the more specific screening guidelines have been these sort of more specialized societies, the National Osteoporosis Foundation, the International Society for Clinical Densitometry. They're the ones who have sort of more taken a stand and specifically come out with screening guidelines. They agree, although it may not be cost effective, they still advocate for screening men over the age of 70 or screening men between the age of 50 to 70 who have risk factors. And the risk factors that they identify as being important were those most important risk factors that I presented to you before, including low BMI, steroid use, a prior fragility fracture, also including smoking status and hypogonadism in there. They also advocate using the DEXA, as we said, we think that that's a good predictor of hip fractures, and particularly in men, it's the hip bone mineral density that you want to pay attention to. Okay, I talked about the Mr. Oss study before. Mr. Oss study really told us that hip bone mineral density is the most predictive for fracture risk. Spine bone mineral density may be predictive also, so it's useful to use, but there's less specificity with age because there's more spine artifacts. So the numbers that you get with spine bone mineral density in men are just not going to be as reliable as the patient gets older and older. So something that's a little bit unique here in men versus women is just really focusing on that hip bone mineral density and really focusing on that number. And again, you know, there are not a lot of sort of societal guidelines. Again, the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force has not addressed this issue. Primarily, one of the major reasons that they're citing is because of this lack of sort of cost-effective screening. So again, the National Osteoporosis Foundation has said, yes, screen men over the age of 70. The ISCD has said, yes, screen men over the age of 70 or 50 to 70 with multiple risk factors. Even endocrine societies have not really come down on this issue, okay? So this is the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, and they haven't yet addressed screening guidelines in men. Actually, this summer, they're getting ready to post their guidelines, and I have a little preview for you at the end. But the bottom line is that this is still a pretty controversial thing, but in general, thinking about screening men after the age of 70. That's really where some of the screening guidelines end, okay? But that's not necessarily where we should end thinking about who to get a DEXA in. So in the absence of more data, other good populations to be obtaining a DEXA in are men who have clinical manifestations of low bone mass. So that will include radiographic osteopenia, men who have a vertebral fracture, maybe incidentally found on X-ray, a man who's experienced significant height loss or a low trauma fragility fracture, or men with several of those risk factors that we talked about. Beyond that initial DEXA evaluation and that initial risk factor assessment, what else might be useful in your evaluation? None of these lab tests have been evaluated from a cost-effective standpoint, but the two sort of most high-yield tests maybe obtaining a 25-hydroxy vitamin D. Of course, I say that from coming from this institution, or a total testosterone level, okay? And again, sort of with the total testosterone level, looking for that critical number of less than 200. That's when we know that there's a significant loss, particularly of hip bone mineral density in men, and that may be the number we're doing something about. The testosterone actually affects bone mineral density going forward. Other lab testing to obtain, the TSA, a TSH may be helpful, serum calcium, liver and renal function, and then sort of in my clinic, my practice is to, also screen for primary hyperparathyroidism, maybe multiple myeloma, maybe GI malabsorptive disorders like celiac sprue, and proceed in that fashion. After a thorough history, looking at the risk factors, after a physical exam, that really the main thing that includes is looking for signs of secondary osteoporosis and checking the height of the man. Okay, so moving towards sort of taking the DEXA, taking the risk factor assessment, maybe you have some lab values. What should we be doing all of this, and who should we be doing it to, right? Again, not clear sort of guidelines telling us exactly what to do, because in men, there have not been large-scale sort of fracture endpoint studies. But the convention is, although the evidence doesn't necessarily profoundly support it, but the convention is that DEXA T-scores for men below 2.5, less than minus 2.5, will commonly prompt the consideration for pharmacologic therapy. So really low T-scores should prompt you to consider therapy in men. Sort of a big question is what to do in that man that may have several risk factors, who has this bone mineral density of around minus 2, what should you be doing in that population? And they may or may not have had a prior fracture. Are people familiar with the FRAX calculator? Okay, so hopefully you guys are familiar with the FRAX calculator. This is a great tool for primary care providers. You go onto Google, you Google FRAX, and this calculator pops up, okay? This is a really well-validated tool to look at who exactly is it cost-effective to treat, okay? Who's going to get the most benefit from treating? And this was actually developed in Canada, but we have great U.S. sort of reference ranges that are plugged into this calculator. It is based on a Caucasian population. That's the only thing, that's sort of like the only caveat that you should know when you're using this. But it's really a great way to combine the bone mineral density and the risk factors to decide who you want to treat. And in fact, as screening guidelines are going to be coming out, they're going to be recommending to use this tool because this is so well validated. Okay, so FRAX takes into account all this different information. First of all, which is the population we're talking about? What is their bone mineral density? And you have this little area right here where you can enter the bone mineral density. And in fact, you know, there are a variety of different bone mineral density softwares out there. You may have seen the word Norlin floating around on the bone mineral densities from Boston Medical Center. That's sort of the software and the database that we use here. But there are other sort of systems. There's a Hologic system that other institutions may use. And in fact, this, when you click this little select button right here, it asks you, are you giving me a bone mineral density from Norland? Are you giving me a bone mineral density from Hologic? So it corrects for all of that, and you can just plug in your number along with a variety of risk factors, including the age of the patient, the gender of the patient, and some of these clinical risk factors, again, that we said were highly correlated both with low bone mineral density and hip fracture risk, including low BMI, previous fragility fracture, family history, steroid use, smoking, and it will give you a percent score for the risk of fracture in the next 10 years. content. This is an extremely well-validated tool to use in women. It gives you fracture risks for a hip fracture and for a general osteoporotic fracture. In men in particular, what's most well-validated is the 10-year hip fracture risk. If that 10-year hip fracture risk is greater than 3, so you're going to enter in all your numbers, and then right here, a little box. I'm sorry that, you know, I wish I could show you this live. A little box pops up right here that tells you the 10-year hip fracture risk. If that 10-year hip fracture risk is greater than 3%, those are the people you should be thinking about treating. The 3% for hip fracture is sort of like the critical number. Okay, so again, great tool to use, and more and more societies are going to be adopting this system to assess fracture risk in patients. So now, we've decided who we may treat, who we might not treat. What are we going to do about it? In the last sort of 5 minutes, my last few slides are just general sort of what is effective treatment. There are non-pharmacologic approaches. Encouraging adequate intake of calcium, of vitamin D, weight-bearing or resistance training, minimizing alcohol intake, particularly if the intake is more than 3 units per day. That's sort of what's been, greater than 3 units per day is what has been correlated with low bone mineral density. Encouraging smoking cessation. In women, it's very well established that sort of the tobacco offset occurs 10 years after a woman stops smoking. In men, it's sort of not as well studied, but presumably it's going to be similar to that. Certainly falling is a huge risk and a huge place that we can sort of intervene, and I think you guys are probably more familiar with doing this than the rest of the hospital. Assessing impaired gait, looking for patients who have poor vision. I always ask my patients, when is the last time you saw an eye doctor? Looking for certain comorbidities that might contribute to falls, such as arthritis or hypotension or cognitive impairment. Controlling polypharmacy. Look at the footwear that the patients are wearing. I encourage, if my patients come to the office with someone else, or like a child, like a son or a daughter, I encourage that son or a daughter to do a home safety assessment. You know, look for carpets that are loose or poor lighting. And then environmental factors. And this is a big thing to think about, especially in men, who are going to be more likely to be the ones outside shoveling the sidewalk. We have calcium recommendations, of course, that we give our patients, particularly for the older men. The Institute of Medicine recommended, this is for general population, sort of the daily calcium intake, but I think it certainly applies to the osteoporotic population. Amounts of calcium greater than this in men with osteoporosis have not been well studied. And while there's a little bit of data in women that calcium intake improves fracture risk, there's really no data in men. But regardless, because we know of the theoretic benefit, we're making standard recommendations. The point is that there's not negative data, there's just no data in men. Again, vitamin D is going to play a very important role here as well. I'm most specifically not quoting you Institute of Medicine guidelines on vitamin D therapy, because Institute of Medicine recommendations for vitamin D therapy are extremely low, and we think for our population here in New England, that's an extreme sort of lowball number that they're presenting. They present men 50 to 70 years of age, they recommend 600 IUs of vitamin D, and men greater than the age of 70, 800 IUs of vitamin D a day. And we sort of know from our population that's going to be nowhere near enough vitamin D, both to maintain serum vitamin D levels at the level of 30, as well as to have a bone protective effect. Okay, so I, you know, I less give you guidelines on how much of vitamin D you should be giving your patients and more encourage you to use the goal of getting a serum level to above 30. That 30 comes from that being the level to suppress secondary hyperparathyroidism, okay? Because vitamin D deficiency leads to higher levels of parathyroid hormone, which of course will increase bone resorption, and you need at least a serum level of 30 of vitamin D to suppress that secondary hyperparathyroidism. And finally, there's drug therapy, right? And we have the bisphosphonates, we have hormone replacement therapy, even in men, we have parathyroid hormone, which is this medicine called Forteo. Does anyone here have any experience with this? No? No, yeah. Okay. But, you know, certainly bisphosphonates have been studied in small trials in men, but really, for the most part, most guidelines that recommend the use of bisphosphonates in men literally do this thing. They quote the probability, it's based on the probability of effectiveness in men based on the woman's response, because that's just where all the data is, okay? But the bisphosphonates that are approved to be used in men include amelendronate, which is Fosamax, risedronate, which is Actonel, and then zoledronic acid, which is the intravenous bisphosphonate, okay? You might know it as Reclast, you might know it as Zometa. And these are the three that are FDA approved in men. Of note, Boniva is not. And then, you know, so I'm going to say a few words about androgen replacement therapy in men, and then finally Forteo, which is parathyroid hormone, is, you know, good database of use in women and presumably just as effective in men. Now, the new kid on the block in the armamentarium against bone in the endocrine world is this medicine called denosumab. Has anyone heard of this? Okay, so it is actually FDA approved in the United States for use with postmenopausal osteoporosis. It is this medicine. It is a human monoclonal antibody against receptor activator nuclear factor. Okay. It is basically against this thing called RANK ligand. And RANK ligand, we know, is the activator of osteoclasts. So you give denosumab, you block RANK ligand, you prevent RANK ligand from activating your osteoclasts and prevent bone resorption by the osteoclast. Again, really not well studied at all yet in men, but it is available for women. So probably more to come with the denosumab story in men soon. And finally, sex steroid therapy, right? So we know androgens improve bone mineral density. The greatest benefit is in men who have testosterone levels less than 200. We keep coming back to that number of 200. Okay, we know that at that level, giving replacement testosterone increases bone mineral density over 3 years. But there's limited data showing fracture benefit when you do that. Okay, so in general, the recommendation is to give testosterone for bone health if the man also has symptoms of hypogonadism, and not just independently if there's no clinical symptomatology related to hypogonadism. And especially for my audience today who works specifically with older populations, based on the TOM trial data from my boss, Shelley Bassine, from last year, I don't know who is aware of this, but the TOM trial looked at men over the age of 65 who had testosterone levels less than 375. These men were men they were described as having limited ability. Like, so they had some disability, and the hypothesis was giving testosterone to these men would improve their bone health and improve their muscle health, and just overall improve the quality of life in those patients. That trial was actually terminated early because the men who ended up getting the testosterone had an increased cardiovascular mortality. So the story on androgen replacement in men is the jury's still out, especially in older men. to really need to carefully consider the potential benefits of androgen replacement and treat patients individually. I mentioned earlier that estradiol plays an important role in male bone health. Obviously, there's really no clinical data on giving estrogen replacement in men, primarily because of the side effect of gynecomastia. There's still a lot of unresolved issues. I don't know. I hope I have clarified a few things for your quality improvement module, but there's still a lot of controversy in defining what is osteoporosis in men. We do know now USEF-specific ranges, but it's still not universal. There's still populations out there where you don't have access to a gender-specific normal reference range, and that's sort of what's really limiting us in determining what the prevalence of osteoporosis is. We're sort of still learning about hormonal and non-hormonal risk factors that may be related to bone loss. We're still in the process of evaluating the cost-effectiveness of the DEXA and lab testing in the evaluation of men with osteoporosis. And studies need to be performed using these pharmacologic agents directly and to directly assess the risk of fracture in men and not just drawing conclusions from what's happening in women. But the skeletal and non-skeletal benefits, and looking at sort of is testosterone appropriate, particularly in the aging man. And finally, you know, this is such a huge issue, and I put it sort of towards the end of my talk because, you know, I don't want it to necessarily affect sort of who we're assessing, at least doing a risk factor assessment. But the issue of Medicare reimbursement for DEXAs in men is a really sticky issue right now. Because right now, in general, the man has to already have the diagnosis of osteoporosis to get the DEXA scan. But how are you going to get the DEXA, you know, how are you going to get the diagnosis of osteoporosis if you don't have the DEXA scan? Right, so it's a big mess right now, unfortunately. It is sort of rapidly changing. Like, this list has actually has changed recently. You can get a DEXA in a man if they have any sort of vertebral abnormality on their x-ray, if the man uses steroids, if there's hyperparathyroidism. You can do it if the man you're assessing treatment response to a Fosamax or an Actonel. And finally, the newest person on the block is men receiving androgen deprivation therapy can get bone mineral densities reimbursed. So we're at least moving in the right direction. But again, remember, this is very different than what happens with women, because women have that sort of clinical risk for osteoporosis simply because they're postmenopausal, right? And that's how you get it reimbursed for women. You don't have that same thing in men. There's no age cutoff that says, oh, they're 70, great, you can get paid for your DEXA. Okay, so just keep that in mind. So we've sort of touched upon the importance of identifying osteoporosis in men today. We've talked about the utility and certain lack of utility for DEXA in getting a bone mineral density to identify osteoporosis. Hopefully you guys will sort of really using the risk factors to identify your high risk population, and then using the DEXA along with the risk factors to figure out who you're going to treat. Okay? And finally, you know, what are some good resources? I think even for primary care providers, the resources coming soon this summer from the Endocrine Society, they're going to be providing us guidelines on what to do about male osteoporosis, and not just screening guidelines, right? Because a lot of the guidelines to date are simply, oh, screen older men or screen men who are more than 70. So coming this summer, Endocrine Society, they will be advocating to screen men who are over the age of 70 and younger men with multiple risk factors. But again, this is only a level 2 recommendation. The evidence here is a little bit weaker. They do advocate using DEXA as a screening tool, and if osteoporotic, you can justify doing other lab testing, giving your patient calcium and vitamin D, telling them to avoid tobacco and alcohol. Consider pharmacologic therapy for men greater than the age of 50 who also have a hip fracture or vertebral fracture, or that T-score of less than 2.5. But again, it's not as strong a recommendation as it is in women, right? Because you can't just sort of jump to any sort of conclusion at a T-score of minus 2.5. T-scores of minus 1 to 2.5 with a prior fracture or high fall risk may warrant therapy, and certainly they're advocating using that FRAX calculator that I saw. Anybody with access to Google can use this calculator and monitor therapy. You can monitor with serial DEXAs if someone's using therapy, which includes these bisphosphonates or teriparatide, which is Forteo. And, you know, they sort of have these special caveats on the basis of that TOM trial. You can use androgen replacement, but, you know, we're having more and more, we're being more and more conservative about the way that we're using testosterone replacement. Certainly, you can consider it if the testosterone level is less than 200 or the patient is hypogonadal. And you can use it in combination with some of these medications as long as there are no contraindications, right? Understanding the risks that come with testosterone therapy, including polycythemia, obstructive sleep apnea, benign prostatic hyperplasia, possibly irritating prostate cancer. So, you know, you have to use some caution when thinking about androgen replacement. So I hope that, you know, you guys sort of take away from this that whereas in women you might have sort of developed this really typical practice pattern where the woman hits 65, you get your DEXA, and then, you know, you slap her on a bisphosphonate if the T-score is minus 2.5, no, we can't do that for men. Like, the story is just not that simple.